top.
All right, I'm going to call the meeting of the Community Services Committee to order. We have with us this afternoon Legislator Burton, Legislator Alvarado, and Legislator Shimsky and myself, and it is 3:39. We are somewhat late in starting because of an overlap with our Housing and Planning Committee, but we are ready. And Dr. Mitchell, good afternoon. How are you? Can you hear us? I can't hear you too well.
Can you pull this out a little?
We need you.
I'm on the floor. Where
are you going?
He's going to be involved.
Oh, okay.
I'm at the max.
All right. Can you
now.
Oh, that's great.
There we go.
Very good. Okay. I wanted to start with this afternoon's meeting. We're looking at a update on the closures of the clinics, and I guess we should start with, you can give us some information on that, and also we need to go back to revisit. But why don't you provide us with the update on the clinic closures?
Sure thing. Melanie, did you receive the documents I sent you just a few minutes ago?
No, but I've been away from my desk. I'll look right now. I'll check my website.
Okay, I just sent over a couple of documents. I apologize, but we just were running around and got them from a couple of sources. Both those documents, I think, would be helpful in terms of addressing a couple of issues that I think are outstanding. So I can go through my report, but if you could pull those documents off your computer, that would be great.
We'll work on that. All right.
Just to give you a summary of where we are, updated numbers clinic by clinic.
Yeah.
As I indicated last month, Mount Kisco has no patients left. Everyone has been transitioned, which was also the case last month. In Peekskill, there are 10 cases, 10 individuals that still need to be addressed, which means that they are people we have reached out to a couple of times, sent letters to, called, and we still have not heard any response back from them. So we don't know whether they have quit, dropped out, moved, left. So as far as we're concerned, we have 10 open cases that we are still trying to reach out to in terms of follow-up.
Okay.
So that's Peekskill.
Okay.
And in Yonkers, we only have 7 patients left that need to be seen. So we started with 383 patients. We have 272 appointments scheduled. We had 111 patients that needed to be addressed. 104 cases were closed subsequently, and that leaves out of 111 minus 104, which means we have only 7 patients left in Yonkers that still need a transition plan to be put in place.
Can you expand a little bit on those 111 patients?
Yes. 111 patients were remaining that needed to be, whose cases were not closed, I believe the last time we spoke. 104 cases have been closed because of either, they were cases that were open in the computer system, but they were not active clients, or they were people who have not responded to our multiple attempts at outreach, or they are people who have indicated that they're not coming back to the clinic and they're not interested in a referral elsewhere. So that's what that 111 group was comprised of, and 104 either decided they're not coming back, or they've left, or they're not interested, or they were not active cases. So when you take 104 off 111, you have 7 people left who still need to be seen.
And you have written documentation as to all these 104 closers?
Well, yes, we have written documentation on every case that's closed in terms of we have the name, the ID number, the disposition of where they went, and when the case, you know, was closed. So we actually have to, we have all that documentation on every single client that we've seen at all 4 clinics. So if someone, for example, did not respond to our outreach The spreadsheet will indicate that they simply did not respond to our multiple attempts at outreach.
And other than letter writing, is there any other kind of attempt at outreach made?
Yeah, there are basically three things. One is we write the letter and we send it multiple times. Two is that we reach out using what is the most current telephone number that we have on file. And then the third is that the clinics, even the ones where there's no one left, like for example in Mount Kisco, for example, we have an answering machine which is the outgoing message has been changed, and it basically says that if you're looking for service or you're returning a call or responding to a letter, it indicates that they should call that hotline that we've been using, the 995-5236 number. Then we also have a poster on the door to the clinic. So if someone shows up at the clinic, they would also see a poster that redirects them also to the 995 number to say, if you need assistance, you can call us.
Actually, the onus is on the patient to reach out to you. Is that it?
You mean to... Well, we don't have any capability to go visit them, so the only thing we can really do are the combination of phone calls, letters, and then to put it on the voicemail and the door. I mean, we don't have any really ability to go out and find them.
Tell us about Mount Vernon.
Okay, so Mount Vernon... Mount Vernon had, I believe at the last report, had 100 cases that were still open, and 58 of those have gone to their first appointment and are in the process of being closed. We have to wait for those people to get back to us and let us know that they're settled in and they're going to continue. So we basically have 42 people that still need to be seen and still need a transition plan made for them. So that's the clinic where we have the most work still to do, but it's still way down from what we started with. When we, you know, when you think about the fact that we had over 1,000 people when we started, and we're down to a combination of about 50 between all the clinics, or 60, we still are on target for transitioning everyone prior to the end of the month.
Let me get back again to these... inactive patients. When you send out a letter, you just send it out regular mail, or you send it out certified?
I actually don't know. I believe that our transition coordinators send them out regular mail, but I will check with them. I'm not sure.
Because it would seem much more responsible to send out a certified mail request. That way you would have at least a signature of the patient or someone in the patient's family actually receiving the letter.
Well, I think that, as I say, I can check with the transition coordinators and see what they're doing on
that.
Okay.
I would recommend that even if a regular letter is sent out, certainly it should be followed up by a certified piece of mail, because just having the hotline number on an answering machine doesn't seem to be... You know, you're leaving the responsibility of the patient without even knowing whether or not the patient received the first letter. Because we all know today, with mail as it is, that it may take a week or more for a patient to even get a letter. And some of these patients are in somewhat brittle condition. They may not even pay attention to the letter. But certainly, if the mailman rings the doorbell and insists on someone signing something, that at least gives us the option of knowing that this person or someone in their family received notification. So please do that.
Okay.
Okay. One of the questions that I'm sorry, did any of the committee members have a question about Dr. Mitchell's report?
Yes.
Okay. Yashinsky.
Good afternoon, Dr. Mitchell.
Good afternoon.
I was wondering about the people who your staff did manage to speak to who said they were either not interested or not coming back. Do we have record, or are you aware of the nature of any of those conversations, why they're not coming back?
What I'm aware of is that they fall into some categories. There isn't one single reason. In some cases, the person had dropped out of treatment not related to the closure of the clinics, that they felt that they were well or didn't need treatment anymore. Mm-hmm. So that's one category of people. Another category is that the person is not interested in transitioning, had told us that they felt that they would do it on their own, and there were, in fact, a small group of people who decided to make the transition calls and check out other places on their own, and we certainly said that was okay to do, but we requested that they get back to us to let us know that they've been, you know, accepted somewhere and settled in somewhere. In some cases, the address and phone number we had was no longer active or valid, so we didn't hear anything back. You know, the letters were either returned or the phone was disconnected. So there were a variety of reasons, but what I can tell you is in each case, we have documentation as to, you know, what was done, whether the letter was sent, the phone call was made, if we got a response, what the response was. So we do have that documentation client by client.
Have any of those, do you know if any of those former patients got back to you saying that they did find another place to receive care?
Some did. That group was very small to begin with. Most people wanted our assistance in finding someone. But for example, some people chose to have their care delivered by their primary care family doctor instead of going to a mental health clinic. So some of them transitioned to a family doctor instead of another mental health clinic. But where we got a response, we documented that.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Dr. Mitchell, I got two emails from you, but they were the same document in both.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. So which one did you get?
I got the final approval letter. But I didn't get the legal opinion.
Okay, so I will get you that as well. It's basically there were two documents that I sent over. I'll resend, or I'll have someone resend it. One was the letter from the state, which basically approves the closure of the four clinics. And the second is a letter that actually was sent some time ago, but we did not receive, and relates to a question that was asked by a board member around the issue of Section 41A of the Mental Hygiene Law. And we did get an opinion, which was rendered by the chief legal counsel at the New York State Office of Mental Health. So those were the two documents we sent.
And when was that legal opinion sent?
We pulled it up, actually got it today, but someone in Albany said that they sent it back, and it's dated like March 13th or something, or shortly after the, you know, when we had the original question was raised.
Yes.
So they say they sent it back in March. We didn't receive it, so we called today and said, we never got any follow-up. Can you, you know, and they said, oh, we thought you received it. So we did get that, and I can email that to you in a couple minutes.
Yes, please do. The other thing is, way back, I guess in January or February, I believe it was, we asked you for a transition plan, and you gave us a sheet of paper with some bulleted items on it. However, we never received a full transition plan, and the board really had that as part of their budget message, and I'd like to know what happened to that. When are you going to send that?
Well, I sent a number of documents. You know, I was just checking back to April when we sent, for example, we have been asked for a list of the mental health clinics that were operating in the county. We sent that. We've been asked for the spreadsheet that would show what we were tracking on each patient. We sent that. We did also send, I think, two summaries of our statistics. And then, of course, we have been updating the board on a monthly basis through through community services on the plan on a monthly basis.
Okay.
So if you would, I mean, I certainly can summarize. If you'd like, I can summarize all of that into a single written document.
Well, I guess we need some clarification here. Are you familiar with Section 13 of the budget, Act for 2010?
Yes.
Yeah. Because it indicates that you are to provide us with a full transition plan, and we have not received that document as of yet.
Again, I was under the impression that I had sent a number of documents that you had requested over the past few months, and that I was updating the board on a monthly basis with our plan. If you'd like me to write all that down, I certainly can do that for you.
You sent us, I think we need to make sure that we both understand each other. You sent a bulleted point, one-page document way back in the beginning of the year, first quarter of the year, which indicated some of the actions that you were going to take. It was not a plan. Secondly, you sent the spreadsheet and the list of the patients and what was happening to them. It still was not a plan. What we're looking for is a narrative explaining what the department, you and the department, plan to do over a period of time with the time limits and all of that in there. This is as the board requested, according to Section 13. You and I both know that what was sent was updates, but it was never a thorough plan, and that's what we're looking for.
Okay, but I'm looking at Section 13, and it says the commissioner presents the Board of Legislators with a plan for transitioning the provision of service required by Article 41, and it does not say a written plan, and my impression was that since I was updating the board every month for the last 5 months, that I had assumed that was, in fact, submitting an updated plan on a monthly basis.
Well, I think according to Article 13, it says that approval by the legislators has to be done, and that was never done. We can't approve something that you delivered orally. You know, the board is going to vote on a plan that has to be in writing, and the statistical updates would have been required anyway, in addition to the plan, not just as a piece of the plan. So I think that the reporting has to be done in writing. I don't think that there is any way that you can indicate to us that a plan was done without any written document.
Okay. Well, I'm happy, as I said, to put, you know, a lot of the conversations and things we've talked about, I can put them into a written document. No problem. I can get that to you.
Okay. When would you be able to get that to us?
By the end of the week.
By the end of this week?
Yes.
Okay. So that's Friday.
Yes.
All right. I'd appreciate that. What is going to happen with the seven, let's see, we've got a total of approximately 80 patients that are awaiting some kind of action. 10 patients in Peekskill, 7 in Yonkers, 58 awaiting appointments in Mount Vernon. The transition plan, I would think, as a final ending paragraph, should indicate what plans are being made to deal with those patients as well.
Absolutely. I mean, the plan is that we believe we will be able to complete the planning for those remaining individuals prior to June 30.
And can I ask that I'm concerned about patients whose cases have been closed, who were just notified by regular letter and telephone. I really feel that some certified mail attempt should be made with those patients. I think that it would not hurt our record to indicate that in each of those cases there is a certified letter indicating the signature by some family member or by the patient themselves. And I think directed to do that.
Well, I will ask the staff to see whether those have gone certified or not. whether we're going to go back to January and send certified letters to people who haven't heard from us in 5 months. I'm not sure whether we're going to be able to do that or not, but again, I will talk to our transition coordinators and see.
And I would appreciate an update on your plans for dealing with that, because I think that's very important in terms of having patients who may or may not be homeless or in, as I said earlier, in a brutal state. We need to know that these patients have, we can document the fact that they have been notified in writing and that someone at that address received the information. So I think that's important for us legally as well as on a humanitarian basis. Okay, Mr. Alvarado?
Dr. Mitchell, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Dr. Mitchell, I seem to recall that I was perusing the document that was just received, and it specifically identifies the clinics that are officially closed. But if I'm understanding correctly, when we read the requirements of the county as far as mental health patients in general, there. Your department continues to be an overseer of services. We are not off the hook totally. We still have to monitor mental services in the county.
Yes.
And your department.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And can you verbalize to us how is that going to transpire beyond the June 30th closure?
Yes. There are a couple of ways that we do that. One is that we get a fair number of calls here at the office from people who are either having trouble accessing service or need assistance with services. So one is that we, of course, respond. So if there are reports from the community that say someone's having difficulty getting served, we, of course, address those. But we're also proactive. We have a community services board as a subcommittee of the Department of Community Mental Health. We have regular scheduled meetings with community providers in which we review various issues that are coming up. We periodically survey them with regard to waiting lists. We participate in the state's surveys of those. All providers in the community of mental health services that are licensed are surveyed by the State Office of Mental Health. We participate in those surveys to make sure that all providers are meeting the minimum, at least the minimum standards that are required by the state. And we're involved if there's a problem in assisting and providing technical assistance to an agency to make sure that they do and continue to meet the requirements of the state. So there are many aspects in which we are involved in providing oversight to the system.
And is there a written response that your department needs to give to the state also as far as the overall spectrum of mental health in respect to the clinics that had officially been authorized to close?
Well, basically, we do a couple of things. We have to submit, annually, we have to submit a state plan, which is basically what services are we currently providing and what is the state, if you will, state in quotes, of services in Westchester. Where are the needs? Where are things working? Where are things need to change? Where are things going? So that's an annual requirement that gets submitted to the state. The surveys of existing services occur on a regular basis, such that an agency, for example, that does not do well on a survey may be re-examined within as short as a six-month time period, whereas an agency that does very well on a survey may not have another survey for 2 years. So it varies based on the quality and the results of those surveys. With regard to our clinics, as I had mentioned, I think in a previous meeting, we will continue to keep the hotline open. We will continue to keep the recordings at the clinics indicating that people can still get help from this department, even if it's 6 months or a year or 2 years from now. And we will continue to have the posters up on the doors as long as we can, indicating again that if someone shows up and needs help, that we're here to help.
And switching the subject to the actual requirements, and I recall the outcry, you know, when this idea was proposed, and we, this board, the majority of this board felt that we were jumping the gun without a transition plan, which was extended and funded till the end of June. Those 104 patients that can't be located at this point, do you feel we're discouraged from participating in any other clinic other than ours? Have you gotten that sense that there was a lot of discouragement from the patients? And I know patients become attached to their doctors and so on. That's very normal, especially mental. Do you think we discourage a lot of people from treatment in the
situation? I don't think so. I mean, the numbers don't indicate that. I mean, I have to say that, you know, I am very appreciative to both the staff who are clinicians at the clinics, who acted, I think, very professionally and responsibly in working with patients over the last several months to try to help with the transition, as well as my on-the-ground transition coordinators. There have been remarkably few issues. In fact, it's gone very, very smoothly. Yes, there have been a handful of people who have expressed, you know, unhappiness with the closure, the need to, you know, with their, you know, the requirement that they have to give up their therapist. Yes, but it's gone remarkably smoothly. The community nonprofit partners have been excellent in rising to the occasion, in expanding, in hiring new staff, in accommodating county referrals, and there have been no real serious kinds of bad outcomes that certainly could happen whenever you institute a change. So I'm actually very proud of the work the staff's done, and there have been very few problems. I don't think you guys have heard about a lot of problems. There have been some issues. We haven't done everything perfectly. Certainly there are some things, you know, in hindsight that you might say, if we were doing it again, we would make some changes, yes. But I think part of that is because there's no how-to manual. It's not like anybody wrote a book on how to do this. But overall, the outcomes have been very positive, and I think people are, most people connected with another provider and have done very well.
Thank you. Thank you, Manager.
Anyone else? I have a couple more questions. Can you share with us the sum and substance of the document from the state while we're waiting?
Yeah, you know what? If I could take 1 second, I can actually just...
Oh, he's in his own conference room. Email.
You're a candid camera.
I can't imagine why it wouldn't occur to him or his staff to send certified letters.
It's expensive. But I'm not
it's
saying
not
that's
as expensive as a home visit.
I got that. I'm just saying that that's usually what people say. I mean, like for instance, DSS sends out every notice and change of benefits and things along those lines. And under federal law, even those kinds of documents are only required to be sent by regular mail. And I know with mental health, it seems worse. It's like 560 a letter. And that's what they'll cite to. I'm just telling you what they'll cite to.
The other thing.
$5,000 to do a mailing.
People get really freaked out when they get
a certified letter. Yeah. That's why certified and regular, so at least you know the regular got through, or, you know, because it doesn't come back. We have service issues downstairs all the time. I mean, yeah, but certified mail does freak people out. Even I don't care for getting, you know, certified mail.
Did you tell you all four clinics?
I'm sorry?
Did he tell you all four clinics? No.
Yeah.
I'm not for
Montgomery.
And how
many are left
for Montgomery? Zero.
Okay.
Melanie?
Yeah.
100. We just emailed it to you.
Okay.
Again?
Yep.
Which president?
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Okay.
I'm going to get that. All right. In the meantime, while we're waiting for that, I think maybe we should talk about. Last time when you were here, when you talked about the fact that an RFP was being prepared to deal with the psychiatric patients at the medical center, that you were closing out that section and that you were doing an RFP for an agency to deal with that?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. So can you give us some information on your progress so far?
Absolutely. We are anticipating approximately $1 million will be received by the state of New York in order to replace the mobile crisis service, which has been operating out of Westchester Medical Center for the last 20 or 30 years. And so what we did was that we, on June 7th, we sent out an RFP to all providers in Westchester County, basically indicating to the providers that they that we are RFPing this service, and that they have until June 30th to respond to the RFP.
June 30th.
Right. So the basic proposal is that we're looking for a provider in the community to operate a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week emergency hotline for mental health crises, and to have mobile capability to be able to go out to a school or a home or a place of business if there's an acute crisis that goes on during the peak hours of the day, which are basically from mid-morning until mid-evening, in which our data showed us were the peak times and demand for that service. So it's really two parts to the service: a 24/7 hotline for mental health crises, coupled with a mobile capability to respond to crises anywhere in the county during the peak times, which are about 50 hours during the week. So that's what the RFP is supposed to cover.
And at June 30th, that is your respond date?
Yes, the responses are due by June 30th.
In the meantime, are what's happening with these patients? Are they being seen as usual? Is there any...
Yes.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. The medical center has not closed yet. They are still operating the service, and they have been told not to close. At this point, they do not have permission from OMH to close. So we don't have an exact date, but we are anticipating that closure will occur sometime this summer, and there will be a transition to a new provider.
Mr. Burton?
Thank you. Dr. Mitchell, I had asked when this situation first came up about the possibility of including bullying as a part of the protocol that we'd be willing to take on people. Has this been included in the RFP?
What I had mentioned to you last time when we had spoken about the bullying issue was that I was going to talk to the State Office of Mental Health in terms of the use of the funding for that purpose, and also whether there would be adequate staffing. The RFP includes the specific number and types of staff that would be available for this program. It is specified in the RFP in terms of the FTEs. And the response I got back was, at least the feeling was, that since we don't know what volume calls that would produce, that the current staffing levels might be inadequate to handle, to take on another function. I mean, we don't know what's going to be involved. But we didn't originally, when the concept was approved by the state a couple of months ago, that was not on the agenda. So I think there is concern that it would be a different use of the team than has been traditionally their role, and whether the staffing will be adequate with the funding that we've been given.
The project as carried out for the last 20 or 30 years at Westchester Medical Center is essentially being duplicated in this RFP, is that correct?
Well, with some modifications. The reason the medical center notified us they were going to get out of the business was that they were incurring a multi-million dollar annual loss operating the program. And part of the reason for that was that they were operating the program on a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week basis, not just with the hotline, but they had mobile capability on a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week basis. When we looked at the statistics, what we learned was that the bulk of the calls for mobile capability were coming in between like 10 or 11 in the morning and like 9 o'clock at night on weekdays, and there was very little activity, not none, but very little activity occurring overnight and on the weekends. So given that the resources were not going to be from the state, we're not going to be at the same level that the medical center received in the past, we decided in consultation with the State Office of Mental Health to modify the program and have the 24-hour, 7-day-a-week hotline operate as it did with the medical center, but to reduce the mobile capability from what was 24/7 to about 50 hours a week. And on off hours, what you'll get is a trained clinician who will answer the phone and will assist you in terms of handling a crisis, but will not have mobile capability.
But is that the only change then from the way the medical center was operating?
That's the major change. Mm-hmm.
Have you then put the medical center on the RFP list?
Yes, they received the RFP, and if they are interested in bidding, we would certainly accept a bid from them to do it in this modified way.
Okay, but are you aware of how the million-dollar estimate of their loss was calculated? Do you have any sense of whether or not that modification would meet their needs, or do you just not know?
Well, I'm not sure they're going to be interested in doing it, because when you look at what we budgeted, the money that the state is giving us, generally speaking, the medical center has a similar situation to the county in that their salary and benefit structure is somewhat higher than the nonprofit sector. So there is still potentially going to be a difficulty for a place like the medical center to be competitive in terms of their ability to hire and staff a team like this relative to the nonprofit sector. So they're welcome to bid, but they may find it financially challenging because there just isn't much money available in the RFP to pay higher salaries and benefits.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair.
Dr. Mitchell, could we get a copy of the RFP?
Yes, actually, Chairman Jenkins had requested a copy, and I sent it to him about a week ago.
Oh, okay.
But it'd be easy for me just to send that to you as well, Melanie.
Yep, that's
okay.
Fine. That'd be great.
Okay.
Thank you. One last thing. When you were discussing with Legislator Alvarado asked about the nonprofits, and you said there was a survey was done, I was somewhat distracted. I'm not sure. Does this in processing the survey, do you include on-site visits?
Oh yeah, the survey process is one in which we want to ensure that all providers of mental health services, whether they're inpatient or outpatient, we want to ensure that they meet at least a minimum set of standards. So what we do is, in partnership with the State Office of Mental Health, inspections are done of all services at every location on a regular basis, and the frequency of those surveys depend on how well the agency performed on the previous survey. So if you don't perform well, you get surveyed again very soon. If you perform well, you get a reprieve and you're not surveyed as frequently. And then those surveys and information are used to assist providers in improving services. So it's not just to file away on a shelf, but the providers are then required to respond to any deficiencies that are found with a written plan that says, okay, we weren't giving timely appointments, here's our plan for fixing that, et cetera.
And the survey, can I assume that it's similar to, for instance, the Joint Commission on Hospital Care, where you have a group of people coming in, pulling charts of various patients to look at the services performed?
That is exactly right.
Yeah. And it's an announced visit. They're given 2 or 3 months notification or a month's notification?
No, actually, we do unannounced visits. They have no idea when we're coming.
Fine. That's perfect. That was going to be my suggestion.
Yeah. Beat you to punch.
Yeah, okay. I'm sorry, does anyone else on the committee have any other questions? All right, you're going to provide us with a copy of the RFP, you said, which you've already sent to the chairman. Can you provide us as well with a copy of a survey document, a typical survey document?
Sure.
And you're going to give us, and you're going to provide us with a written transition plan?
Yes.
And you're going to provide us with some information by the end of the month on what happens to these 100-plus odd patients that from the various four clinics?
Yes.
Okay. I think that's it. Does anyone else have anything that they want to add to, in terms of what we are asking for? Okay. And I think that's it. All right. Would you hang on while we read this document you just sent us? It would seem that
sure.
Whether or not we should or can contract with the providers one way or another. It just says that the attorney, Jay Zucker, doesn't feel that it's required under 47.07. I would like a more definitive answer than this.
Well, Jay is, it lists him as associate counsel, but Jay is actually the as far as I know, Jay is the top legal advisor to the New York State Office of Mental Health. I'm not sure why it says associate counsel, but there's no one above him as far as I know. So I can ask him if he can say something, I guess, more definitive, but I'm not sure exactly what you want.
Doctor, if you just take a look at the second sentence, it says we must contract for them, but then the last sentence says, I don't think that it's required under 41.07. It's just confusing as written. I don't know what it says. We must, we may, possibly,
yeah.
Sometimes. I don't know. But the paragraph just doesn't make sense as written.
If lawyers mean to say, this is the factual answer, they know how to say that, and this does not say that.
Okay.
Perhaps we should communicate with Mrs. Zucker directly?
That's not a bad, I think that could be a good idea.
Yeah, we'll have one of our...
We may or must, Doctor, you know.
We'll have one of our...
That's up to you.
Yeah, we'll communicate with him directly, okay. Doctor, can I assume that sometime the first week in July that we'll have some results in terms of... what has happened with these remaining patients?
Yes.
Okay. Then we'll get back to, we'll look to hear from you. We'll schedule something right after 4th of July.
Very good.
Okay, fine. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You have some minutes, Chairwoman, but I was not present for
okay.
For
the we have three sets of minutes.
I'd be prepared to move all three.
I'll second.
We don't have any receive and file.
No.
So,
hey, Phil. Nice work.
we're going to
after
get
4 o'clock.
We're going to get a list happened. Of all the stuff that we're supposed
I have
to get.
And I'm going to go back and watch it again. And make sure I have it exactly right.
Friday and
oh, said
did you adjourn?
Oh, I
so moved.
But
I need to
thank you. It's been moved and seconded.